Harvard and Yale's and the Ivy League and all
Yeah.
these big name, the 100 schools that everybody wants to go to and everybody thinks it's the ticket to success. Those schools can be more selective, and they can, Harvard very regularly tells people it's going to be full price.
Financial independence,
freedom,
financial picture,
independent financially,
financial future,
financial freedom and wealth,
financial independence,
get your fill, financial independence and long life.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Get Your Fill, Financial Independence and Long Life, where we explore ways to achieve those two goals. And we invite people on to help us who can help in that regard. And that's why I'm very happy that Brad Baldridge is here with us today. He is one of the nation's leading college financial experts. He teaches families the best ways to plan, save, and pay for college so they can make their children's college dreams come true without wiping out their finances or their retirement. And that's kind of like the other part of financial independence, right? If you can make lots of money, but also if you spend less, then you're in better shape. So rather than sacrificing your own retirement for your kid's college or having to choose between the two, Brad's going to help us to navigate that. So Brad, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So Brad, I think like anybody can start when their kid is born and save for retirement. But like, what if you thought that your kid was going to grow up to be a carpenter and then all of a sudden they decide they want to be a nuclear physicist and you're like, crap, I didn't save for that. What am I going to do now? Like, what are some like last minute strategies that people, maybe not last minute, let's say they're in high school and they're like, oh, you know what? I decided that I really want to become a physician. And you're just like, huh?
Right.
Well, what can we do? Right. Do we just have to like slay their dreams right at the base, or can we help?
Right. I mean, yeah. So there's a wide variety, of course, of what people can and should do. But I mean, the reality of it is most families don't have this big pile of money all saved up and ready to go for college.
Right.
There are a few, and certainly if you're on that track, great. But for most families, they're going to come maybe with some savings, or again, sometimes it's zero, or oftentimes it's zero at the beginning of high school, let's say. And it's like, oh, I guess college is here now. Maybe we should focus on it. And a lot of families, your income starts climbing as, your career starts to take off. And all of a sudden, you've got a little extra cash flow to figure out how to deal with college.
Yeah.
But every family is a little different. But if you look at the typical college campus, it's full of students. So it does get figured out in the end. It's daunting, it's stressful, but there is light at the end of the tunnel in that thousands and thousands of college students, millions actually do it every year.
Yeah.
So it can be done. But I think the goal for most families is to do it efficiently, to do it with the smallest amount of stress as possible. I mean, you mentioned, do I have to pick between retirement and college? And generally, families that come to me, their number one goal is figuring out how to pay for college. And number two is retirement. Or maybe it's in the other order, retire, then college, whatever it might be. And for some families, it works out, right? If I need $2,000 a month for retirement and I need $2,000 a month for college and I've got it, it's been the budget, we're great, life is good.
Yeah.
Some families, it's, well, I need $2,000 for each, but we only have $3,000 a month. And how do we... do we short one or the other? How do we fill the gaps? How is it going to work? And then of course some families are, well, we're not doing anything for either. And again, that's pretty tough. Now, and depending on your income, right, there's need-based aid and merit aid, and there's all kinds of things that we'll talk about where there is aid out there to help families that have lower incomes and lower assets. Less of it for higher income families because they assume that mom and dad can afford to help. But that's kind of the big picture of, yes, it happens, most families figure it out, but if you can do it, like I said, a little more efficiently, then maybe you can have a little more money for college, have a little more money for retirement, or maybe you can add a third goal, add vacations or add something else if you can do everything else a little better.
And what are some ways that people can go about that? Like some strategies? Because of course, if you just have the money and you can just put it aside, then I suppose this isn't really that, it's still challenging, but it's not the same kind of challenge as to where you're right in that kind of not so sweet spot where you have some money and you have some income and you're not really considered, you know, marginal income, you're not really considered maybe worthy of very much financial aid, but it's still kind of a struggle to think about, you know, getting that kid to a point where you can, because maybe they don't want to go to the community college, right? Maybe they want to go to a $50,000 a year school instead of a $20,000 a year school or whatever. So
right.
What are some strategies?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of what I would call strategies and tactics. You know, if I make this change, then I'll get a little bit more need-based aid. If I make that change, I'll save a little bit of taxes. And there's literally hundreds of those that families can use. And that's part of the planning process, is to figure out, well, which of those, you know, are actually ones that make sense for me. And, you know, some families, as an example, may not qualify for merit aid as strongly because their kid's not that strong. Other families may not qualify for need-based aid that well because their income is high. Some families may qualify for both, and then they have to balance it all out. So, you know, the individual tactics, you know, are good again, but it's, you know, like I said, we could talk all day about all the different opportunities there. But if we look at kind of the big picture of how college works, right, you pick a college and it has a published price. So the average state school right now costs about $28,000 a year. And that's total cost. That's tuition, room and board, books, fees, beer and pizza. It's the whole cost of a typical student for a typical year. And it's average. So your student could be above average or below average. You know, if you pick the single dorm and you eat like a king, well, you're going to spend more than, you know, if you're eating ramen noodles and have lots of roommates. That's, you know, so there's some variability, of course, but that's average. Now, the average private school is around $60,000 now. And again, some are more, some are less, and there's a lot much wider diversification. You know, the most expensive private schools now, the Ivy Leagues and Stanford and University of Chicago, are all pushing $90,000 per year. And again, that's the total cost, you know, to be fair.
Yeah.
But you don't really care what the total published price is. I mean, you care, but it's not the end of the story, because lots of families receive various types of aid and free money that brings their net cost down.
Yeah.
So a great analogy for this is if you're go to Walmart and you buy a $20 t-shirt and it costs $20. Okay. You can buy a similar t-shirt at Kohl's or some other department store. The tag says $65, but if you do things well and you use the right things, and all of a sudden when it's all done, the t-shirt costs you $20 sometimes, or maybe $15. You say, oh, great. You know, I really saved because I even beat Walmart after it was all over. But if you don't plan well and don't understand what's going on and you just walk in and grab a t-shirt and walk out, well, you pay $65 for a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And you know, if you'd known better, you'd have gone to Walmart, right? And that's the reality of how college pricing works, is there's need-based aid and merit aid that could be tens of thousands of dollars off various prices. Now, generally, there's less off for the state school. So the average free money at a state school is about $8,000, and the average free money at a private school is in the 20s. So there's more aid available. Well, of course, the price is higher, so it's a little easier for them to provide discounts. So for a lot of families, your local state school is going to be the price to beat. And for many families, it can be beaten, or at least somewhere nearby, right? So if you think about that standard school that costs $28,000, that's your local state school. Let's say you happen to be in a very average state. And again, there's some, you know, varies between probably $35,000 and $20,000 for a total cost. And again, we're talking about a four-year on-campus type experience. Obviously, the local community colleges and those types of things could be dramatically less than that. But if you're on campus paying room and board and all that type of thing. So if it's $28,000 and your student can earn a few thousand a year, $3,000 or $4,000, and then the student can borrow another $5,000. So maybe it's $10,000 off. So now we've got a gap of about $18,000. If you're at a lower cost state school at a lower cost state, the gap might only be $10,000. Higher cost, it might be 20. And that's kind of the parent and student's piece to pay. Now, and again, a lot of students don't have a lot of, other than the income I just mentioned, the summer jobs and that kind of stuff, they don't have a lot of assets, a lot of additional ways to raise funds. And they can only borrow $5,500 as a freshman. Now, mom and dad could have money saved. They could take out additional loans. They could take it out of cash flow. We're just going to sign up for a payment plan and pay $1,000 a month. That'll cover $12,000. And then we'll also, take $5,000 out of savings. Or, again, maybe there's other buckets of money or other scholarships and so forth. So it usually comes together, but it's a piecemeal of a number of different things and a number of different programs. It's rare that a student gets that full ride. Certainly the star basketball and football players get that at the D1 schools. And then there's some academic superstars that get, they're the presidential scholars at certain schools and that type of thing where they get a full ride. And full ride might mean zero tuition, or it might be tuition and room and board, depending on what program we're talking about. And, so then I all kind of builds from there.
So Brad, when you're working with people, I mean, what kinds of, all the things that we've talked about so far are things that people know. So what I kind of want to get at is like, what are some things that are a little less known, some things that are more, specialized, like before we were started recording, you talked about negotiating with schools. So, I mean, obviously if you have some star player or something, you can do those kinds of things, but can an average person negotiate with the school and say, hey, okay, you're willing to give me this. If you'll give me that, then do we have any sort of bargaining power? Is there anything, or we just have to sort of take it? And what are some kind of things that the average person maybe doesn't know or isn't aware of?
Right. Yeah. So it is becoming much more prevalent that you certainly can negotiate. Now, it's not, my lawyer is going to beat up your lawyer type of negotiations. It's, can you help me? I'm in a situation where something has changed, maybe a death, divorce, disability, loss of job, whatever it might be. Or sometimes it's more of a competitive thing. It's like, well, these three schools are lower cost, but the one I really like is more expensive. If I could get the one I really like to be more competitive, then I would go there. But where it stands now, I mean, you can always put it out there and see what they say. Some people
in
get
general,
nervous.
I mean, are schools getting like an order of magnitude more applications than they intend to let, or are they looking for students? Do you know what I mean? Is it, who has the any kind of bargaining power in this kind of a situation?
So there's schools out there that definitely are in the driver's seat, right? The Harvard and Yales and the Ivy League and all these big name, the 100 schools that everybody wants to go to and everybody thinks it's the ticket to success. Those schools can be more selective, and they can, Harvard very regularly tells people it's going to be full price, $90,000.
Yeah.
And they happily write the check because it's Harvard.
Yeah.
Right. One small town university says it's going to be full price, people will say, well, I can go to the state school for a lot less. I think I'll do that instead. And, and that's the reality, right? If your student get into the flagship state school in your state, well, then I guess they've got a reasonable cost choice. And now they have some bargaining power, theoretically, right? I'm going to go to the local state school if you can't get within reasonable price of the state school. And all the colleges know that. It's not a secret.
Right.
Now, some of them say, have decided, well, we'll try and get in reasonably competitive to start with. And then if they come back and ask for more, then we'll offer them more if they're serious. But we're not going to put our best numbers out there for everybody. It's kind of like when you go to buy a car, right? How much is that blue car over there? Well, do you want to test drive it? No, I don't want to know what it costs. Well, there's a sticker in the window. You can go read the sticker.
Yeah.
Okay. But I know I don't pay sticker. So what's the real price?
Yeah.
Do you want to test drive it? I mean, are you here to buy a car, or are you just here to get a number to take it across the street?
Right.
If you're going to buy it, we'll talk price. But if you're just, you know, kicking the tires and wanting me to spend a lot of time, you know, and that's the way the, you know, most of us are familiar with that. And again, the whole buying a car has changed, right? Because there's been a big shift of power from, you never knew what the costs were, to now with the internet, there's lots of pricing data out there. And it's kind of the same thing is kind of happening with the college process now. Is used to be the only people that had any data at all were the colleges. Now there is some availability out there. And that's where I help people figure out, well, what is a fair price and what can you expect? Yeah. You know, some schools are notoriously, you know, higher priced and they're not going to budge. And then some schools, as an example, only offer merit aid. So if you went to Harvard and said, only offer need-based aid. If you went to Harvard and said, well, my kid's a rock star, he deserves more money. That's true at some colleges, but at Harvard they say, well, everybody's a rock star here. Yeah. So that's no big deal. We don't offer any sort of aid unless it's based on need-based aid. So the, you know, there's a whole slew of colleges at the top where it's all going to be based on your financial aid forms. And if you have the rock star that can get accepted, well, that's all you need to do. And then if you show need, they'll provide need. Then there's the next layer of schools where they will provide a combination of need and merit. But they will cover everything you need if you show a need. And then there's some schools that will essentially gap you and say, yes, you deserve a $50,000 scholarship. Unfortunately, we don't have enough to go around, so the best we can do is 40. And so there's different types of schools that you're dealing with. And it depends on if you're a high academic achiever, kind of mid-level and that type of thing. Then another strategy that most people aren't aware of is a lot of these colleges will have the presidential scholar, right? So take a kid that can get into Notre Dame, which is pretty challenging. You know, they may, but just barely, right? They're the bottom 25% that can get accepted, but you can get accepted. Well, if you go to Notre Dame and say, well, what about financial aid? It's like, well, you're below average, so we're not going to give you a whole lot.
Yeah.
That same student applies to Loyola or some other school that isn't quite as challenging, and they may get a $30,000 scholarship. And then they may go to a very small regional school that nobody's ever heard of, and they might be the presidential scholar who gets a full ride. Now, the challenge is you take a kid that can get accepted at a more prestigious school. Where do they want to go? Well, a lot of times they want to go to the prestigious school, and mom and dad want that to happen too. But sometimes that means if you're going to go to this school you can just barely get accepted to, that means you may have to pay more than if you're willing to take a step down.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole discussion around, well, is it worth it? Well, I don't know. That's, you know, when you're driving down the street and you look over and you see that $200,000 sports car, some people say, oh, look at that. That's silly. That's not worth it. Well, the guy driving it thought it was worth it. Now, hopefully he could afford it. He didn't blow up his retirement so he could drive that fancy sports car. Hopefully, you know, he's got everything figured out. And, you know, but so that's where we talk about, well, you know, some families, if you're going to give up the lake home so you can pay crazy amounts for college, well, that's your prerogative. It's your money. You can do what you want with it. But again, where most people get nervous is, am I blowing up retirement in order to pay crazy amounts for college?
Right.
Or do I have alternatives? You know, do I have to pay crazy? And crazy amounts is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, I've had many families say, well, $40,000, that's great. And I've had many families say, wow, $40,000, that's crazy. So it is a relative thing. And that's one of the challenges. But again, there's lots of paths that you can take. And it, you know, it really, really boils down to finding schools that are a good fit, not just academically and socially, but financially as well. And sometimes
so when you sit down with a family, I mean, how do you usually proceed? Where do you begin with them?
Right. Well, again, it's very similar to what we've talked about is what schools, types of schools are you interested in. Most of the time, we're going to run the numbers on the local state school because, again, that kind of puts a stake in the ground and saying, okay, well, this is potentially a low-cost option for you. Maybe we can beat it. Maybe we can't. But here's your local state school. And then the question would be, is it the flagship state school that's competitive, right? I mean, if you looked at Texas, there's University of Texas, Austin, and the top A&M schools that are a little more prestigious and pretty selective. You know, they don't take everybody. They take the top 10 or 20% of a typical high school class, or maybe even more selective than that. So if you can get into those schools, well, now you have leverage at other schools that have the similar prestige. But if you can't get into those schools, now you don't have the leverage. So a typical school that would like to have a student that could get into that flagship school, they might be offering $30,000 and $40,000 scholarships for those kids. And the $70,000 school now is a $30,000 school, very similar to the state. But for kids that can't get into that school, they might be offering $10,000 and $20,000 scholarships. So now your $70,000 school is $60,000 or $50,000. But you don't have the option of the prestigious school. And now you're going to go to the state school that nobody's ever heard of, right? Most states have, you know, especially the bigger states have 5, 10, 20 campuses. Big states have 30 or 40. A couple of them have a lot of cachet and many of them have less cachet. And that's just the way it is. So, but because of that, you know, now families are trying to figure it out, you know, again, trying to place that. So that's the first step is we work to try and find schools that are a good fit and get a reasonable net price, whatever that means. And then the next step is how do you pay that reasonable price efficiently? So are we getting all the tax breaks we can? Are there things we can do around need-based aid? You know, people often come and say, you know, based on the formulas, if I do this instead of that, it can make a difference. And let me give you an example. So they just redid the FAFSA. I don't know how much, you know, your typical listeners have known this, but there's a big to-do going on right now. The FAFSA's in the news a lot because they redid the system and it hasn't worked very well. So they're in the, you know, kind of like what healthcare did 5 or 10 years ago when they tried to change the system. It's the computer systems aren't working well and it's making a big mess. Hopefully it'll be cleaned up, but kids that are seniors right now trying to go to college in this coming fall, they're struggling because they're not, the data is not flowing to the colleges. They're not getting their offers and that kind of stuff. But when it comes to actually figuring it out, you know, the higher your income, you know, so need-based aid is based on the income and assets of mom and dad and the student. Well, the typical student that's rolling out of high school, going to college, their income is negligible, their assets are negligible. And then there's occasionally where their assets are high because grandma passed away and left them a trust or, you know, something like that. And that's bad, right? Because student assets are assessed more heavily than parent assets. So when we see that, you know, those are some strategies. How do we get the money out of the kid's name so it doesn't impact need-based aid? How do we adjust the parent assets? And how do we adjust the income? So with the rule change, as an example, if you're a self-employed individual and you put money into retirement, the way that you deduct it, it shows up on your tax return. So if you earn $100,000 self-employed plumber, you put $20,000 into your retirement, you pay taxes on $80,000. But the deduction shows up on your tax return. When they fill it, when the FAFSA processes that, they see that $20,000 and they add it back in. So now your income goes back up to $100,000. That same family, instead of, you know, let's say that's a married couple. So instead of putting $20,000 in the retirement at the plumbing business, if you put $20,000, mom's a teacher, and you put that into her retirement, well, that doesn't show up on the W-2. Or doesn't show up on the 1040. It shows up on her W-2. So her W-2 is smaller. So the colleges can't see that. So that actually helps you for financial aid. Okay. So depending on what types of retirement you have, it used to be, and this change is very recent. So there's a lot of misinformation on the internet because, you know, the rules, you know, it was accurate when it was written, but it was written before this change.
Yeah.
You know, in the past, they always added back your retirement contributions, no matter where you did it or how you did it. Now they have to see it on your tax return to add it back. So now putting money in retirement can make a big difference. And there's some lines in the sand where if your income and for lower incomes, you know, I'm working with a family right now where if we can keep their income below about 70,000, then they automatically qualify for a maximum Pell and a couple of other things. And we can use contributions to retirement as part of that now. So we're making sure we contribute the right amount in order to slip under that line. Now, some families are saying, but I'm nowhere near 70. I'm at 150. Well, exactly. So then what you do as far as saving for retirement has a different impact than that family. And that's, I think, the challenge with college planning is it's kind of like taxes, and as it can be very complex, and there's lots of calculations and forms. And but if you understand the system, you know, just like most people will say, you know, when I was really young, I didn't bother to put money into retirement. That was so stupid. I could have gotten all that match for all those years. I just didn't know what I didn't know.
Right. Yeah.
College planning is kind of in that same boat, right? You don't know what you don't know, and you can either advocate for yourself and either figure it out or find someone to help you with it, or, you know, just take your chances and hope it turns out well. But for in a lot of cases, like I said, there's a lot of strategies around shifting income and assets for financial aid and for taxes. They don't work for everybody though, because again, if you're going to some schools, they may gap you and say, yes, you worked hard. You used to need 20,000. Now you need 40,000. Unfortunately, we only have 10. So it doesn't matter whether you need 20 or 30 or 40, right. We're only going to give you 10. So you do all that work and it didn't really move the needle. Whereas in other situations, it can move the needle a lot. So,
So people who are listening, who have children who are probably eventually going to go to college, and these parents haven't done anything yet to prepare for that eventuality. Is there any advice that you can give those people, like some action items they could take so that they're at least in a better place when they come and talk to you?
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, college planning starts in high school. So we mentioned it's based on your income and assets, and it's actually based on the tax return that starts the middle of your sophomore year and ends the middle of your junior year. So for a lot of families, when they're actually filling out the forms, they're looking back about a year. So you typically fill out their financial aid form in the fall of your senior year,
mm-hmm.
This year being the exception. They didn't get it going properly, but so fall of your senior year. So if you're going to go to school in 2025, you're going to fill out the financial aid form in fall of 2024, and you're going to use 2023 taxes. So this, you know, the plumber story I just told you, they have to make those decisions and actually get it done prior to the sophomore year of high school.
Right.
So that's the first step, is you need to start earlier than you realize. to figure out, well, how does need-based aid work and how does merit aid work? Do I have the plumber problem or some other problem? Right. I mean, and again, there's lots of tactics. But some of those tactics, you know, need to start as early as possible. Now, and again, if you're, for people that are listening that have a senior and say, oh my God, why, you know, too late already. And yeah. Well, it's not too late. It's just your planning might not take effect till sophomore year or junior year. And then for a lot of families, it's like, well, we've got a high school senior, a high school freshman, and two kids in grade school. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously you do the best you can with your oldest, and then you'd learn and do better the next time.
Right.
That's the reality for many families. But so, yeah, so you want to start early. I recommend if the students are mature enough, and not all of them are, but you might do some visits in the sophomore year. You might do some planning around, well, what if we just went to the local state school? How would that look? Because I think in a lot of cases when the typical financial advisor is doing college planning, they say, well, what school do you want to go to? They look up what it costs and they build a plan to have a big pile of money. And that's they consider that college planning. And, you know, and again, that's just the tip of the iceberg of most families then say, well, that's crazy. I don't have that kind of money. I have kids in daycare, and they ignore it. And eventually it catches up with them. But, you know, what is a fair price for college? You know, so you, I've got on my website, we've got the cost of colleges for each state. And we, not only do we have the published price, but we also have the net price based on income. You know, so a typical state school, you know, is 28,000. And if your income is 100,000 plus, your average price is, you know, 26,000, let's say. So there's a few people that get a little bit off, but a lot of people pay full price at the higher incomes. If your income is zero, your average price might be 6,000 or 8,000, because you're going to qualify for a Pell Grant. You're going to qualify for the state grants that might be available in your state, you know, so forth and so on. So that's, you know, again, that's part of the planning process. Do you have a shot at need-based aid and Pell Grants and that kind of stuff? We've got a calculator on our website where you can figure that out as well, or put in your income, put in your assets, get a preliminary read on how that will work out. Our goal is by the end of the junior year is to have a working school list. So these are the 5 or 10 schools that we're going to apply to. And maybe it's maybe you're done completely, or at least you're saying, well, these are the 5 we're most likely applying to. We might apply to a couple more. We're still thinking about it. And we might kick this one out. We haven't decided yet if it's before, you know, but we're pretty solid list. And not only do we have that list, but we know approximately what they might cost. Not list price, but net price. Will we get need-based aid? Will we get merit aid? Will they come in at a price that we're happy with? I get calls every year from families that are really late in their senior year, and they're saying, you know, we applied to 7 schools, only 4 accepted us, and the 4 that accepted us are crazy expensive. What do we do? Well, you painted yourself in a corner, unfortunately. You should have picked different schools or done different things a year ago and 2 years ago, because now, you know, when you're in that situation, it's like, well, you write a big check and pay the price. You take a gap year and start again for the following year. And you can pay the price and transfer the next year. You sign up for big loans. There's just not, or find a school that will take a very late application, which often is not the types of schools that some families are interested in. Yeah. And that's the reality of, you know, some families, unfortunately, don't get it right the first time and have to suffer a little. But, you know, so again, doing things sophomore and junior year, I talk about this a lot. I've never, ever had anyone say, I started college planning too soon.
Yeah.
But I've had a whole lot of people tell me we started too late.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's, I think, the biggest takeaway for most families is there's college planning when you have kids, right? Should we be saving and investing? And if we're going to do that, where do we save it? And can we afford to? And what's our goal? You know, what is our family goal? Are we paying for all of college, some of college? We're just can't help at all. And that has a lot to do with how many kids you have and what your philosophy is and what you're able to pay and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But then switching over to what I call late stage planning is when you're in high school, well, now it's go time. You may have saved a big pile of money. You may not have any money at all saved, but no matter what, now you're visiting schools, figuring out testing, trying to understand how need-based scholarships work and merit scholarships. There's the outside scholarships as well, another big category. You know, I had a family probably 10 years ago, they applied to 41 scholarships and they won 7 for $40,000.
Wow.
But I've also probably done 300 plus college plans in the last 15 years. And they're the one I can talk about. They're the one, right? that has that kind of story. And I've got a couple of similar stories, but, you know, just a handful of stories that have that kind of success and certainly that amount of work, right? I mean, how long does it take to do 40 scholarship applications?
Yeah.
It's not something that you knock out on a Sunday afternoon. It was many, many Sunday afternoons, and the parents helped. Now, hopefully they didn't write the essays, but maybe they, you know, searched for the scholarships and made sure that all the copies went, you know, make three copies and mail it here, or make sure you put it on the website over there or whatever it is. So they help track deadlines and keep things organized and proofread the essay. And, you know, but it was a big project and very successful.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, many families don't do that because they don't know how or what, how to do it or what to do or when to do it. And B is they just, that's not realistically, they don't have the time available because they didn't start early enough to say, all right, in order to, where they're still worried about, we got to get our normal application. We got to get our financial aid done. We got to get just our applications for college is overwhelming. We don't have time to deal with outside scholarships and all this other stuff. So again, it's, like I said, it's a process that, and quite frankly, for some families, you know, pursuing a bunch of scholarships may be a lesser thing to do anyway. They're better off negotiating with schools or saving, investing, or other things, right? It depends on the student and how well they can write and or compete for scholarships.
Yeah.
And, you know, their time might be better spent at McDonald's at $15 an hour than spinning their wheels in scholarships.
Yeah. So Brad, how did you choose this niche, or did it choose you?
A little of both, I think. I've been a financial advisor longer than I've been involved with college, and I still do, you know, general financial advice as well. But as I started talking about college, I realized that, you know, most people didn't understand how it worked. And I also started to get a better feel for all the different strategies and realize that there's a big need out there of people don't know what the options are. They don't know, you know, how it works, and they need it.
Yeah.
So, as you know, so I started giving presentations at high schools, and it just became a bigger and bigger piece of what I do for families. So now most of the people I'm working with are dealing with college, or I'm still working with them, even though college is finished and now we're focused on retirement or other goals.
Cool. Brad, what's the best way for people to reach out to you if they're just like, yeah, this is overwhelming, I can't really deal, I want to just have Brad do this for me?
Yes. Yeah. So everything we do is at tamingthehighcostofcollege.com. So I have a podcast there. We've got, as I mentioned, calculators and other resources under the resource tab. And then there's also content, you know, we can reach out and schedule an appointment right on the website, or there's a phone numbers there. You can give us a call, send us an email, whatever you'd like to do to reach out to talk further, if that's what you'd like to do. And we also offer a free email newsletter. That's another good place for people to start. However they, you know, however we can help, we're here.
Excellent. Thanks, Brad. And of course, all of Brad's links will be on the, in the show notes. So you can just scroll down and find all that information and just click to talk to Brad. Brad, is there anything you wish I would have asked you that I haven't asked you?
I don't think so. I mean, we've got a pretty good overview. There's always more. I mean, it's a very complex topic. So, I mean, we can talk for hours. But really, it just boils down to just do it. I mean, most parents are busy. You're going to have to carve out a few hours and do what you can, and then carve out a couple more hours and do what you can. And you're going to do that many times through the college process.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you, listeners, for listening. And I want you to think of somebody who you know that has kids that are thinking about going to college or who are about that age, and forward this episode to them so that they can benefit from Brad's knowledge and experience. And if you have kids, obviously, do so yourself. And make sure you come back and join us again next week. Thanks, Brad.